Gotcha. That makes a lot of sense. Okay, so let's go on to the next question, which is, you use great phrases and verbs in your letters. What do you suggest is the best way for me to expand my vocabulary to write more like you do?
Well, that's a tough one. My parents were had tremendous vocabulary, so I kind of came by it naturally. But, you know, if you feel vocabulary challenged, a couple of things. First of all, remember what we talked about earlier. You don't have to be a great speech maker. You know, you don't have to be Winston Churchill. What we do is about persuasion. It's about presenting a cogent argument. Now, my cogent arguments tend to address emotions,
mm-hmm.
you know, as well as practical benefits, but also emotions. But you need to speak to your market in the vernacular they're used to speaking in and listening to from their buddies themselves. And so it doesn't take a great wordsmith or somebody with a fantastic vocabulary.
I guess what they're talking about, though, is like a phrase like a brawl with no rules,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, obviously, someone would understand all those words, but that phrase might not occur to them in the writing.
Well, one thing I know I catch myself doing all the time is whenever I hear a phrase that resonates with me,
mm-hmm.
and I just kind of do this instinctively or automatically, but, you know, it might be a good exercise for people who feel challenged in this way, and that would be whenever you hear a phrase that resonates with you, immediately start turning it over in your mind. You know, whether you hear it on radio or television or somebody says it in conversation or whatever, start turning that phrase over in your mind and repeat it to yourself, you know, over and over again. Try to improve it. Yeah, try to make it say more than it says now, or say it more emphatically or more dramatically, and just a few times, just for a minute or two, and just the act of doing that emblazons it in your subconscious, and you'll be amazed at how it's fed back up to you when you need it most. Another thing, and if you want to be really proactive about this, then go to websites and seed your name on mailing lists where you're going to get copy that's written by people like me and like others who tend to have a bit of a flair with some of these phrases, and then do that same thing. I don't know if it's on our site now or not. No, it's not. I've asked our people to put together an entire page of nothing but metaphors, similes, and other figures of speech. And because if we want to speak colloquially, it couldn't hurt to have a tickle file of colorful phrases that entertain and at the same time communicate. So hopefully we'll have that up there soon. But
so that's another reason to make sure that they're on your list.
Yeah, but also, you know, you can get online and Google metaphor, simile, and let's see, what was the other one? Figures of speech, and you get into like Wikipedia, and then there'll be a lot of links in Wikipedia of simile, metaphor, and figures of speech sites, and just kind of immerse yourself in it, you know. Again, you'll be amazed. What you feed your subconscious comes back.
Yeah, no, that's a very valid point. And I guess another thing, yeah, and you said it, was if you're seating yourself on lots of great, on places where you would be exposed to lots of great copy, just when you read through it, either highlight or copy down or what have you,
right.
phrases.
Right, so and the two things that give energy to copy are verbs and adjectives.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, another thing to do is, you know, remember that cycle of write, edit, write, edit, write, edit, right? So on one of those editing passes, you know, you can just say, on this pass, I'm going to focus on verbs and adjectives. And, you know, verbs can be passive, active, or over-the-top extremely active.
Right.
There are appropriate points in your copy for all three. You know, when you're going for credibility, maybe a little understatement would be better. When you're going to really drive a point home, then maybe overstatement would be better. And so, you know, going through just looking at the verbs and just asking yourself, is that the, and Ben Savenga does this, by the way, and it's part of his genius, this kind of attention to detail. He'll go through and he'll look at the verbs and he'll just say, okay, you know, is this the best verb I could use here? And then he does the same thing with adjectives. And you'll be surprised how many adjectives or verbs that you use that are just absolutely not appropriate. He also looks for words. He does another editing pass just to look for words that can be eliminated without changing the meaning or the impact of the copy. You know, like one of my favorite words to delete is the word that. If you go through copy and you just you just search for the word that, and every time you see it, ask yourself, if I take that out, will this copy read better or worse? And in a long copy thing, you'll find hundreds of instances like that that will speed up the copy and create momentum. So, you know, the answer is dedicated editing passes, looking for those things and really asking and focusing on them and asking yourself, is there a better verb, adjective to use there?
That's very valuable advice. So thanks, Clayton. All right, so the next question, which, you know, you might just say everything I've said so far, but is what do you say to new writers that want to be successful like you?
Go out there and do it. First of all, you know, all the writers that I'm dealing with today, and, you know, when I got started, when Ben Savenga got started and Jim Ronson, all these other guys, there were no copywriting e-zines. There were no courses on how to write copy. There were, you know, my mother-in-law, when Wendy told her that we were getting married, she asked what I did. Wendy said, oh, he's a copywriter. My mother-in-law immediately thought I was like one of those old Jewish scribes that used to sit in a room and copy the Bible onto a scroll. You know, he's a copywriter. Nobody even knew what copy was and what copywriting was. But today we have the blessing and the curse of all of these manuals and courses and everything else. And many of them, I think, make the mistake of teaching you rules. And
uh-huh.
So I see the byproduct of those rules when I hand an assignment to one of my copy cubs. Their eyes glaze over. They're immediately confronted with 57 different conflicting rules that they have read that are absolutely inviolate. I mean, it's like breaking one of the Ten Commandments if you break one of these rules. You know, when you start writing, forget the rules and talk to your prospect and speak to his desires and needs and fears and frustrations. But then do it and do stuff that gets used. If you don't have a client, go get one. If you can't get a client, get a product. But get out there and start doing it and measuring response and seeing how it changes based on the quality of the headlines and the opening copy and the other things that you do. Then as soon as you can, we're talking money here, so as soon as you can, start acquiring clients who will pay you a royalty on what you do instead of paying you a flat fee just for doing the work. The clients that pay a flat fee are worthless to me. I wouldn't even consider that. If I'm going to give you a 30% lift in response, I want a percentage of that lift. That incentivizes me. It engages me. It gives me passion. It makes me really more of an advocate for your product than you are. And you're going to get my best work that way. And the best clients already know that and are perfectly willing to pay a royalty. Now, you know, just real quick, if you're doing a promotion that's not supposed to make money, okay,
right.
Like a name acquisition promotion in direct mail, the objective there is to mail the maximum number at break even or better. The client is not looking for a profit, okay? So taking a percentage of profit would be kind of stupid on my part.
Right.
So in those cases, I say, okay, look, the better the copy is, the more pieces you'll mail, So I want a percentage. I want a royalty on every piece you mail. I want 5 cents. Okay?
Right.
So, you know, you do that. If you're writing a promotion that's supposed to make money, then I take a percentage of the sales I produce. And
basically, you know, front end, it's all about, like, number of units mailed or, you know,
right.
some derivative of that. And then on a back end type thing, it would be a percentage of the sales.
That's right.
Gotcha. Okay. And that makes a lot of sense. Okay. So let's go to the next question. I don't like to write anything. Do I have to learn copywriting to make money online? I'd rather pay someone else to do it, you know? You know, it's part of the question. I like that.
No, you don't have to learn copywriting. But let me just say this. You've got to know the difference between good copy and bad copy. You've got to know enough about copywriting so that you know whether you're getting your money's worth when you hire a copywriter. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, you know, there are plenty of guys, because of the power of product launch formula, okay, and it is powerful. There are a lot of guys out there that are putting out, I'm sorry, in my opinion, absolutely abysmal copy and still making a ton of money. So the answer to the first part of this question, you know, do I have to learn copywriting? No, you don't. You know, if you've got a great product and you follow a formula or a strategy that really works well for you, then God bless you, go for it. But unless, if your copy is weak, you could be leaving 50%, 75%, even 90% of your money on the table. So, you know, once you get going, my advice would be, let's say you're just starting up. Go ahead and do product launch formula. Follow everything that Rich and Frank and Jeff and all of these guys are telling you, Mike. And that stuff is going to make you a freaking fortune. Then at some point, you're going to be sitting there with a lot of money and a whole bunch of customers and leads and wondering how you can reduce your income tax bill. And the best way I know to do it is to take some of that money and get hooked up with a really, if you don't want to write the copy yourself, get hooked up with a really good copywriter and then just sit back and watch him multiply what you thought were spectacular results by an order of magnitude. When you get to that point, you do need to know enough about the process to at least to be able to critique that writer's copy and to keep him honest and to keep him working, you know, and going in the direction that's going to work for you. And so for that reason, I strongly recommend that everybody who's serious about building a business have at least a working understanding of sales writing. I was in Bill Guthrie's house a couple of years ago. Bill is co-owner of Guthrie Ranker, the big infomercial company. And we were sitting around shooting the bull, and I said, hey, Bill, I said, what do you do? You know, he was promoting Vanna White's tooth whitener product at the time and had like 100,000 people who had bought it, and he also had Jay Cordish's juice machine,
mm-hmm.
and he'd sold like 100,000 of those at $300 or $400 a pop. And so, you know, we're sitting there talking. These are valuable names, and he didn't have leads. I mean, he was selling the product, these
right.
customers. And so I said, what are you doing with these names? And he said, well, what do you mean, what am I doing with these names? And I said, well, you've got these customers. You know, they buy the product. What do you do with them? You know, what do you send them after they buy the product the first time? He said, well, we send them the product. And it occurred to me, he didn't get it.
Right.
You know, and I said, well, do you realize that you're probably only making 10% of the money from this file that you should be making every single year?
Well, that probably got his attention.
And at that moment, his back-end direct response company was born. So, you know, the same thing is happening now online. People are using product launch and they're using the things that you teach, Rich, and the other gurus that I respect, and they're making money hand over fist. And that's really great. But the look of realization that comes into their faces the first time that they see what top-notch copy can do to their already great results is just priceless.
Yeah, I would imagine.
So.
All right, cool. So then let's move on. So this is kind of a compliment and flattery wrapped into a question. How did you get so damn good at copywriting or writing copy? Who did you learn copywriting from? Were there any books that were especially important?
Okay. I know we're running a little over, so let me answer this quick. First of all, I learned copywriting by putting my name on lots of mailing lists of companies that hired great copywriters. And so when I was getting started, Gary Bensavango was already a superstar, writing financial promotions for Philips and KCI and not Agora at the time, I don't think, but Philips and KCI. And so I simply, there was no internet. I had to call these companies up on the phone and say, I want to subscribe to one of your newsletters. What do you got? You know? So I subscribed to the newsletter. And the fact is, in the direct mail business, all of the financial newsletters are very incestuous. They all rent each other their customer lists. And so I knew that if I got on Philips and KCI's list, I would start getting promotions from every financial newsletter, every financial publisher in the country. And I did. And it was a red letter day for me anytime a Bensavanga package hit my mailbox. And I did the same thing with Boardroom, and it was a red letter day when a Gene Schwartz package hit my mailbox. So, you know, that was how I learned. And then, but even before that, I was really lucky. I had been doing direct response television with absolutely no training, just doing it, you know, and we had a show that was on 350 markets, and I was doing all syndication, writing the show and doing a lot of the film work and all the video editing for that show when I was 19 years old. And but I had no idea what I was doing. And I thought I was going to spend the rest of my life in the film industries and TV industry. And I moved to L.A. To take a job in Hollywood. And the job fell through, and I couldn't get into the union. And so I found myself with a pregnant wife, no money coming in, living in Watts, and in a house that a friend of mine happened to own, a slumlord. one day I saw an ad in the paper for a small direct response agency that needed a copywriter. And so I went in, auditioned, and got the job. And the very first thing that happened was this guy named Mike Engler, who does a lot of the fundraising for the National Rifle Association and Right to Life and other conservative organizations, walked into my office and plunked down a stack of books. And he said, read these. And before you write anything, read these. And he said, you need to be able to recite these. So, you know, read them 2-3 times. He said, read them once fast. Read them another time and highlight the best parts. And then read them a third time and transcribe the best parts. And so I did that. And the books he gave me were John Caples, hang on, I want to be right about this. I can get the actual titles. But John Caples, Claude Hopkins, Rosser Reeves, and David Ogilvie. And they were the grand old men of the advertising agency, and they were the founders of ad agencies that still today are among the biggest in the world. It's really a sad commentary that the agencies they founded have absolutely abandoned the philosophy and the teaching that these men did on what makes for great advertising. But here's some books to look at. Okay, Breakthrough Advertising by Gene Schwartz.
Mm-hmm.
It's in our store, by the way. You can get it from us or from Boardroom. How to Write a good Advertisement by Vic Schwab.
Mm-hmm.
My Life in Advertising and Scientific Advertising by Claude Hopkins. Amazon has them combined in one volume.
Mm-hmm.
Reality in Advertising by Rosser Reeves. The Robert Collier Letter Book, and you'll have to go to Robert Collier Letterbooks.com for that one. It's out of print. Ogilvy on advertising, Amazon has it. And then later in my career, I came across Al Rees and Jack Trout's book. I know you love it,
yeah.
Like I do, Positioning the Battle for Your Mind. And it's just fantastic in understanding the golden ladder inside your prospect's head and how to position a product in even against enormous odds. I mean, if you've got a little root beer company and you're trying to compete against Coca-Cola, this book shows you how to do it and how to win.
It's a great book.
Yeah, Tested Advertising Methods by John Cables. And Drayton Bird, he's a good friend of mine. He was he's the guy David Ogilvy said knows more about direct response than any man alive. And he was co-chairman of Ogilvy Mather Direct with David Ogilvy. And he has a book, How to Write Sales Letters That Sell, that's excellent. And then, not on sales copy, but books that really helped me, a couple. Successful Direct Marketing Methods, which is very dry reading, but it I think copywriters need to fully understand how the numbers work in direct response, and that's a great resource.
The author of that?
Huh?
Who's the author of that?
Bob Stone.
Okay.
It's published by McGraw-Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Amazon has it. And then I love...
That one.
Huh?
That's a big fat one.
Yeah, it is a big fat one. And I read that thing cover to cover, and it's a badge of honor. But even now, it's a great resource. Looking Out for Number One by Robert Ringer, I thought was a great insight into... human psyche.
Mm-hmm.
And he also wrote a book, Winning Through Intimidation. I think both of those books were excellent because they really give you a clear picture of how your prospect is thinking and how his mind works. And then, of course, Psycho-Cybernetics by Maltz, Maxwell Maltz. And that's also available at Amazon. That's the core of my copywriting and marketing library. And frankly, I think there's enough in those books to keep you busy for the rest of your life.
Yep, I would agree.
You master that stuff, and you're going to be richer than God.
All right, so then let's move on to the next question, because those are great resources. Is there a time to use short copy over long copy?
We just released the sales page for something called the Ultimate Copywriter's Desktop, the Ultimate Desktop Copy Coach that Tony Flores wrote, and it's really an exciting product. And my email, I wonder if I still have it. It was probably about 15 words, and that was it to drive people to that sales page. There are lots of opportunities to use short copy, but the fact of the matter is when you're selling in earnest, long copy will always outpull short copy. So I guess the answer to the question is that if the media limits you, you know, if you're doing half-hour infomercials, you're limited to half-hour. If you're doing two-minute spots, you're limited to 2 minutes. If you're doing tombstone ads for a newspaper, you're limited. If you're doing full-page ads in a magazine, you're limited. So if the media limits you, so be it, okay? But when you have the choice, when you have the option, you need to write until you run out of benefits. Okay? If that takes you one page, okay, fine, you're done. Okay? If it takes you 50 pages, that's fine too. You saw Gary Bensavenga's promotion for his conference videos, right?
Yep.
How long was that? Wasn't it like 50 or 60 pages?
Yeah, it was something like that, if you printed it out, for sure.
Yeah. So, you know, the rule is simply write, you know, if you're not limited by space or time, write until you run out of benefits. Fully explore every reason why your prospects should buy this product. And don't worry about the length. Having said that, let me throw one more thing in. Arthur Johnson is a red-hot copywriter right now. You've probably seen him on television. He does those infomercials for Boardroom Books, with Carney Wilson and Hugh Downs selling the Book of Health Secrets. And Arthur got his start at the Franklin Mint. He was kind of running the marketing area there, and was writing a lot of the copy, if not all of it. And anyway, Arthur is the consummate entertainer. He understood, because he was selling Franklin Mint stuff that basically is pointless. Okay, it's not really made out of gold. It's not really a collectible. It's not really limited numbers in most cases. You know, you get a gun that looks like the gun that Wyatt Earp had at the OK Corral in a nice box, but the damn thing won't even shoot. You know, I mean, it's stuff.
Right.
And so what he was selling was entertainment value, and he connected with that very early on. And so now, as he's selling health newsletters and books on health and things like that, his stuff entertains you as you read it. It rewards you for reading it by keeping you entertained. So the longer your copy is, the more you're going to have something in there to keep people reading. And the two best devices for doing that is to, one, deliver value in the copy. Actually give away information that people can use that'll bring value to their lives right now. And number two, get them engaged on, interacting with your piece as if it were entertainment. And if you want examples of that, you can seed yourself on Boardroom Files and take a look at some of the stuff that Arthur produces.
Yeah, it's great stuff.
Yep.
Cool. All right, so then let's move on to the next question. And I appreciate you staying on longer to kind of wrap these questions up. How is copywriting online different than offline? If there is a difference.
Yeah, there's a huge difference. But, you know, the thing is that I used to answer the question by saying there's no difference. And my reason for saying that was because people are people, and it doesn't
right.
really matter whether you're standing at your mailbox or at your kitchen counter sorting through the mail or laying on the couch watching an infomercial or surfing the web. You still have the same needs, the same fears, same frustrations, same desires. You still have the same skepticisms. You're the same guy, right?
Right.
And so if you speak to those things, then your copy's going to do well. And that is still, essentially true. But the more time I spend on the web, the more I realize that there are some differences, and it should have been more obvious, but I'm not that bright.
You're right.
Differences are, A, the Internet is free. Therefore, you can contact people more often. Therefore, there needs to be more texture in those contacts, okay? There's a difference in that people have different expectations when they go to the web. Anybody who's tried to offer products online, and especially anybody who's used a model where you give away free content or free value prior to asking for a sale, it has run into a situation where you get emails from the, which absolutely is hilarious to me, especially in the marketing area, you get emails from people who are absolutely incensed that you would have the nerve to actually ask them to spend money. Your job is to give them everything you know absolutely for free, because this is, by God, the Internet, And you have that expectation, and you're going to run into that. So there are people who are sitting down with the mindset that I'm entitled to all of this. Isn't that going to require, that's an objection. Don't you want to address objections? Don't you want to overcome them? So there are a lot of differences. The emotional texture of your copy, the entertainment value of your copy, formats that you want to present your copy in need to be dictated by the message. More urgent emails or more personal emails in the Outlook format that looks like a text email, and higher impact or more emotional messages in HTML. There are a ton of differences in that regard. But when it comes down to actually writing the copy, you're still writing to a person who puts his pants on one leg at a time, who thinks his bald spot's getting too big, his paunch is getting too big, his checkbook's getting too skinny. He still has all of the same buying motivators that are offline. And one of the things I think that Jeff did so well with his with product launch is that, you know, as I look through his materials, he has basically taken time honored marketing concepts, his emotional triggers, for example, and his various types of proof. These things have been used in sales copy since Aaron Ward invented the first catalog in the late 1800s. What Jeff's genius has been is to pull it all together into a system that works and that makes sure that you have every single weapon at your disposal, right?
Mm-hmm.
And having all of that available combined with the free web and being able to, you don't have to do them all in every contact, in every email. So emails, if you think about the prospect, yeah, it's all the same. If you look at an email and compare it to a successful direct mail package, you're going to see huge differences for those reasons, you know, because you don't have to accomplish it all in one communication. You can just spread it out over time, which is what product launch is. So he's basically taken, if you think about it, he's taken the Magalog and he spread it out over 6 weeks, right, which gives you enormous, and added interactivity, of course, which gives you enormous opportunities to use even more proof elements, even more credibility, even, you know, more involvement and so forth. So that's my thought about that.
All right, cool. So let's move on. The next one is, I've heard that you shouldn't include a picture of your product in your ad for an information product. What's your take on that?
It depends on the product. If I'm selling a newsletter, I never show it. And why? Because they're boring as hell. You know, mm-hmm. two-color print on white paper. Who wants to see that, right?
Yes.
But if you're selling the kinds of products that you're selling, you know, where you pack, you know, what, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 worth of value into a box that just keeps opening and opening and opening and opening, you know, and you open this and there's, you know, 15 CDs, and you open that and there's 7 DVDs, you open something else and it's a 3-inch thick binder full of great material, then, you know, I think it's crazy not to. And I, even in direct mail with Boardroom, you know, there's this whole thing about focusing on benefits, not features. Well, the size and complexity of a product is really a feature. And, I mean, there's no benefit in the fact that, you know, your course weighs 35 pounds and you can get a hernia trying to get it from the front porch to the sofa, you know. But even in Boardroom promotions, I would always have a little box somewhere in the piece that would have a picture of the book, and it would say 623 big pages, you know, 2,535 illustrations, you know, self-check tests, you know, basically the features of the product. And the rest of the piece was entirely about benefits. But, you know, I wanted to show the product. There's nothing magic about what Boardroom books look like. I mean, they're black, and they have these gold foil titles emblazoned on them. But I always wanted to show it because I wanted to show the heft, the thickness, this was a substantial product. So in that regard, I disagree with that advice. But again,
I guess the bottom line is that if you should always include a picture when you believe that the picture will actually...
if it helps dimensionalize value, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense. And the... all right. And then this one, I don't know if... kind of feel like we've already answered it, but... my sales letter didn't work. What do you do when you have a dud, if you ever? And then it says in parentheses, if you ever do.
Oh, I've had plenty of them. I like to look at two things when a promotion doesn't work. And I think this would work online. This works online as well as in direct mail. The first thing I do is I look at the response rate. And the second thing I look at is the average sale. We gauge... In my agency, we gauge things on the basis of return on investment. We see every dollar that's spent in marketing, either paying the copywriter or buying the media or doing the mailing or whatever, or the printing, as an investment, right? And so then what comes out at the end is your return on investment.
Mm-hmm.
And so we judge success or failure by ROI, return on investment. So, but ROI is made up of two things, number of orders and the size of each order. So if I find that my response rate is low, I'm going to be looking at things like my headline. I'll look first at the list. I'll look at the media I went to. You know, was it right? Did I screw up? Did I, you know, are these people not qualified? Secondly, I'll look at my headline. Did it stop people? Did it get, you know, if my response is low, chances are people didn't read the copy.
Right.
At all. Okay. And so I'm going to be looking at the things that would sell readership, which would be the lead, the headline, the lead, the layout. You know, is it unreadable? I mean, did some artist get a hold of it and just garble it so that, you know, it's too much work to read, and things like that. If my response was okay, but my average sale was very low, then I know my headline and lead may have worked, probably did work. But the copy itself didn't do a good enough job of presenting the benefits or the reasons why they should go for the larger order, whether it's a 2-year subscription as opposed to one, or give me a 3-month supply instead of a 1-month supply kind of thing. And so I look at those parts of the promotion. It's rarely that you'll find where you totally miss it on all levels. So, you know, look at response and look at average sale and just ask, what are they telling me? I mean, if you get a low response but a high average sale, what does that tell you? My God, nobody read it.
Yeah, yeah.
But if a few people who did read it, you know, I had one of those not too long ago. About a year ago, I had a health promotion, and I looked at it, and the ROI sucked. So I looked at those two components, response rate and average sale, and my average sale was, they could have bought a 3-month or a 6-month supply of the product. Every single order was for the 6-month supply. You know, I had an average sale of $180. So, you know, and then I looked at my response rate, and it sucked. Well, I was really relieved because all that means is I got to write a better headline, you know.
Right. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So.
Any last words about that? I think you got it.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, cool. So that wraps up the interview part of this, and I want to once again thank you, Clayton, for really addressing all these questions and really giving perspective to how you work and how everyone can become better at what they do here. And so two things. One, if you can give your URL again, and then two, if you have any, you know, last-minute comments that you'd like people to know and or you think is important for them to know as they use copy to grow their business and be successful online.
Sure. Well, the URL again is www.makepeacetotalpackage.com. It's MakePeace totalpackage.com. And the site's free. We have RSS feeds. You can opt in. You can just bookmark it and come back whenever you want to. You get 5 really excellent articles per week by myself and 4 wonderful editors who contribute on copy, small business building, media, the works. And we're about to add a 6th friend of mine who was with McCann Erickson for years and did the Coke It's a Real Thing campaign for Coca-Cola.
Mm-hmm.
He's a graphic designer, and I met him in a biker bar. And his name is Larry Owen, and he's going to be starting the week of the 4th. He's going to be doing a new post on our blog about graphic design, which is going to be excellent. And it's all free, so, you know, come on over. And I would be probably kicked out of the marketing club if I didn't also mention the fact that an hour and 30 minutes ago, we just launched the Ultimate Desktop Copy Coach product, which is definitely worth a look if you are looking to improve the quality of the copy in your promotions. And you can get information on it by, you'll see when you go to the site, there's a a banner on the right-hand side near the top for a couple of free reports on copywriting conspiracy and a couple other things, actually. There are three. And click on that. It'll take you to the blog for that product. And check it out. And I think you'll like what you see.
And yeah, it's an absolutely amazing product. And for those of you who want to get better at copywriting, I couldn't think of a better way of doing it than getting your hands on that. I was lucky enough to get a preview copy, and it's just amazing. And it's really the best copywriting course I've seen out there. So you definitely want to check that out. The last part was just any final words of wisdom.
Wow. Always use protection. just do it. You know, dive in. Don't be intimidated by it. And think about copy, as I said earlier, just as a friendly conversation with a prospect. If you do that, you're halfway home. You know, everything I learned, everything I needed to know about writing copy, I learned during the process of talking my dad into getting me a bike for Christmas in fourth grade. You know, it all came down to what does dad want and how can I get what I want by giving him what he wants. And that's the essence of what we do, isn't it?
Yep, that is. And that's actually when I went to Ava's school and I tried to explain to them what I did, that's what I had them do. I had them actually as an exercise, make an ad for something that they wanted, but then think about what their parents want and tie the two together.
Yeah. One of the best examples of that I think I've ever seen was a letter that was written by a college student to her father.
Oh, yeah, I know what that one is.
I wish I could find that again, but it was so great. It was supposedly, who knows if
right.
it really was, you know, an actual letter sent by a college student to her dad, mom. And she just said, boy, things are going great here at college. I'm a little lonely. I really miss you a lot. You know, how's little Freddie doing? Tell him I love him. I really miss him. And, you know, we had so much fun on that little picnic we took last time I was home. And I just can't wait to get home at Christmas time. And this time I promise I won't bring my laundry. And college is going okay. And, you know, I'm getting straight A's in all my courses. And she just goes on about how well she's doing in college. And she says, and I really hate to ask you this, but, you know, I'm just out of money. The amount that you gave me is just not cutting it. And, you know, my friends are going on this field trip to Oxford or something, you know, to get this great additional education. And, you know, and I need, you know, $3,000-$4,000. And I know it's wrong, but, you know, I got a job and I'm, you know, all of the rationale was there. All of the emotional triggers were there. All the credibility was there, you know, and it was just a great model. If we can find that, we need to republish it. It was great. Or, heck, I'll just sit down and write one, you know, for you said. But that's what you're doing, you know, when you're writing to a prospect, you know, you're doing the same kind of thing. You're establishing credibility, a touch point with your prospect, an area of commonality. Then you're going from there to your rationale, and then you're asking for the sale. So it's really kind of the same thing.
I got I saw my parents 2 weeks ago because it was one of my daughter's birthdays, and they brought me a postcard that they found that I had sent away. I had sent them from sleepaway camp when I was 8 years old. And it was, hi, Mom and Dad. Jeff in my bunk just got a Walkman. It's really awesome. I really would love to have one. But you guys give me a lot already. I know it would be wrong to ask. So there's something like that. And it was hilarious.
That's perfect. That's perfect. See, there was a young rich chef and being born right then, a young entrepreneur.
Yeah, I should actually scan that in and post it up on
at
the blog.
At that moment, you learned that slapping black ink on white paper makes you money.
Oh, boy. Well, that's great advice. And so with that, let's close out the interview because I know that, this has got to be a busy day for you with the launch and all. And, you know, I'll speak to you real soon, Clayton. And just once again, thanks for taking the time and, you know, shedding some insight on how everyone could be better and really grow their business. And, you know, for everyone listening, you really, I would strongly recommend to listen to this at least twice and then read the transcripts, highlight, and apply what Clayton has taught into your business, and it will definitely make a difference. I know it has for me, and I know it has for, you know, everyone who subscribes to Clayton's newsletter and reads his site, and it will do the same for you if you take action on what Clayton has just talked about.
Great. All right. Well, thanks, Rich. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks, Clayton. I'll speak to you soon.
Okay. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.